miles per hour. Current temperatures, 45 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha, 36 to the west for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It's 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg, on the way next. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have two interviews for you today. In part one, you're going to be meeting a faculty member from Carthage College. In part two, you will be hearing from the author of a lovely new children's book called Wash Day Love. Here's part one. We're going to be spending the next portion of WGTD's morning show talking about something that is sort of part of a whole world out there that is lost to most of us, but it's such an important part of how American society functions, and for that matter, other societies as well. And it has to do with something called product management. And it's something that many, many companies have, and something that many, many companies are maybe talking about in different ways now. But it is such an important part of what allows products to get from place to place, for companies to have what they need, and for various products to ultimately get into the hands of consumers. And it's like this whole network, this whole web that, again, most of us know next to nothing about. And it is also the kind of thing in which one can study and gain accreditation and perhaps even a master's degree to hang on the wall. We're going to be talking today on the morning show with a faculty colleague of mine from Carthage College, Lisa Franklin, who is assistant professor of management and marketing. And we're going to very specifically be talking about Carthage's new master's program in product management. It's one of several relatively new graduate programs at Carthage, sports management being another, business design and innovation being another. We will be focusing mostly on product management and also learning a little bit about Lisa Franklin's own interesting professional journey, which has ultimately led her, as of 3 years ago, to be a part of the faculty of Carthage College. Before that, she worked for many, many years for Johnson Controls, eventually as global director of product management. So she brings an enormous wealth of personal experience and expertise now to the classroom teaching others about this. Lisa Franklin, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm glad we can have this conversation, and I know that I'm going to learn a whole lot about something that I know next to nothing about. Let's just dig a little deeper into what I just touched on, namely your relatively recent arrival in the world of higher education and academia versus a lot of real-world experience that you had before that. First of all, tell our listeners a little bit about where you come from originally and your history, which I know includes studying at Carthage yourself, and a little bit about where you have been before you began teaching at Carthage.
Yes. Well, I am a Kenosha native, born and raised here. And as you said, I did my undergraduate studies at Carthage. And this is, it's kind of interesting because my path, my career has been very zigzaggy and up. That's how I describe it to my students. I consider this my encore career. After 26 years in the automotive battery industry, I thought I wanted to explore some new things. And I was actually at Carthage for a reunion and had a thought. It just came to me I should teach here. So I began teaching while I was still working full-time, just as an adjunct, one night a week, and then eventually decided to retire from my previous career and went into consulting and also teaching, and then it grew more. And add another class. It really, my experience with teaching was first in undergraduate with marketing communications, and then moving on and adding marketing research and consumer behavior and so on. But because of my experience in product development and product management, I was able to join the master's program for the business design and innovation. And now just this year, we've launched a targeted master's certification and full master's program in product management.
Very good. Well, I think this is the time for us to now take this term apart that I think most of us, at least from time to time, will hear product management. We might know somebody who I've had a family member or two who I know have worked in product management, but I've had absolutely no idea whatsoever what that really means or what that work entails. I wonder if you would mind sharing with our listeners a cute story you told me before we went on the air about you and your siblings and your mother and in a sense her inability to completely grasp what it is that you did for so many years at Johnson Controls.
Oh, yes. I have two sisters. One was a flight attendant and the other a court reporter. And those are both very easily understood professions. And my mom would talk to people about what the girls were doing, and Linda's going here, and Leslie's working on this case. Lisa has a really good job. It has something to do with batteries.
That was it.
So, I mean, she just didn't understand what that was.
And most of us don't really know what this, I mean, most of us know, of course, what a product is, but yes. When it comes to this matter of product management, that's something altogether different. So how would you summarize what that term, at least generally, means?
So the product manager is a person who's the champion of the product. Some people describe the role as being a CEO of the product. You know, you own it. You are involved with the idea generation, the becoming the expert in the needs of the customer, the end consumer, and then you shepherd it through the development process and actually the full life cycle. The full life cycle of the product. You manage when do we retire certain products, when do we bring in new ones. It's creative and analytical. In fact, I like to say we're a rare breed because we are both. We need to be both. We have our foot in both worlds. And one of the things I like to describe, we're kind of part marketer, part engineer, part communicator, part lawyer, you know, all of those things. But ultimately, and I'm taking this from Seth Godin, we're in charge of the magic. We're in charge of finding the solution that's going to solve the problem that the customers have. And one of our talents is really seeing what others don't see, seeing the unarticulated needs of our customers, and then translating that need into requirements for a product.
Right. You know, it occurs to me that where I was maybe learning about product management but not realizing it was a couple of years ago, I interviewed the author of a book about a couple of the most important leaders at Apple. And and one of them was more in the, you know, innovating part of it, and the other was more of a numbers guy. And I'm actually blanking out on their specific names. But so when it came to things like developing the iPad and the iWatch and the, you know, different Apple Watch or whatever, but these different products and that whole matter of what is the next thing that people might want? What is the next thing that might make a difference in?
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Racine's Festival Park is offering a risk-free fundraising program for local schools and nonprofits. To learn more, go to festivalpark.com/fundraising or contact Rebecca at 262-636-9229.
It's Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. In weather, we'll see high temperatures in the 30s and 40s today, a little bit cooler than yesterday, but still not too bad. No rain or snow expected across the state. Lows down in the 20s overnight. Tomorrow, highs in the 40s and 50s, and temperatures are expected to continue warming throughout the week. This is WPR.
Support for NPR comes from the station. And from EasyCater, a business tool for food designed to help organizations order food for meetings and events from restaurants nationwide, set up employee lunch programs, and manage food spend at EasyCater.com. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Metamucil psyllium fiber supplements to support daily digestive health by trapping and removing waste. Learn more at Metamucil.com. From Moderna, committed to protecting people from COVID-19, the CDC recommends getting a second dose of this season's COVID-19 vaccine for those 65 and older. Doctors can advise about getting a second dose. And from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people at wtgrantfdn.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez. Elon Musk's fan base has helped his car company Tesla succeed, but here's Bill Marks.
A protest took place last week at a Tesla dealership in New York as anger against Elon Musk and his role at the Department of Government Efficiency was transferred to Tesla. In Massachusetts, a Tesla charging station became the target for an arson attack, while in southwest France, a group calling itself anti-fascist torched a dozen Tesla vehicles. In Europe, sales of Teslas in January fell 47% compared to last year, and that's at a time when electric vehicle numbers from other manufacturers are rising, says Sigrid De Vries, Director General of the European Association of Automakers that tracks new car sales across the continent.
We see an upward trend. I mean, by any standard, you could say that reaching 15% market share, again, it's an average, for battery electric vehicles is remarkable in just 5 years.
But Tesla sales are struggling not only in Europe, but China, Australia and the US too, says Gordon Johnson of New York-based equity research firm GLJ. And the reasons for that are twofold.
Solution, a better way.
Right.
So that's what Steve Jobs was doing and his team was doing. They were observing and coming up with a better way that no one had imagined. But it does start with really focusing on the customer.
Right. That's a very important point. I think you're making it really well, that a given person might have some sort of frustration in their life where, boy, it's really hard. But that doesn't mean that person says, boy, if only I had a blank,
right,
you know, to solve this or to make this better. And like you said, that is the responsibility and the opportunity of a product manager to come up with some of those solutions or those life betterment tools that can make a huge difference in people's lives.
Right. And in fact, we work in teams, and it's most important that product managers are very collaborative and understand, listen more than they speak.
Yeah.
Most of the time, especially when you're observing customers in their native habitat.
Right,
You want to watch people use your product or in the world where they would be using a product like yours and see what they do. And that I think I sent you something about one of the examples that I like to tell is the Swiffer
mop. Oh, right.
The Swiffer mop is a huge category that didn't exist 15 years, or maybe it was about 15 years ago when it was invented. And essentially, that came from watching people in their homes washing their floors, being frustrated by, you know, as soon as you put the mop in back in the bucket, the bucket's dirty water, and then you're spreading dirty water around on your floor, that kind of thing. Or I just finished washing my floor and my child comes through and spills something. Well, I don't get the mop out again. I get out a paper towel and maybe spray it with a cleaner and push it with my foot. You know, doing those kinds of actions, people just think that's normal. And by watching these actions and understanding their frustration, P&G was able to develop what is now a huge product category, billions of dollars.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I just bought a box of replacement Swiffer pads or whatever you call it last night. So it's funny that you should mention that. And yeah, it's a part of many, many people's homes and has made life a whole lot easier in those situations. And again, it's not that somebody experiencing that frustration was in any position to know what the answer was.
Right.
But that was someone else's opportunity to create that.
Right. Hmm. And as product managers, we work collaboratively with a cross-functional group in the company. I spent my life with engineers. You know, I'm a marketing person, and, you know, just talking with engineers and observing our customers with our product and coming up with new ideas to make it better. And in fact, innovation can happen at every level of the company. So you have the people who make the product, so you can innovate on the process itself.
On the assembly line, so to speak, or whatever it might be.
Yes, and then it goes through distribution, and you can innovate the product in order to make it easier for the people who have to handle it and sell it and ship it and all of those things and packaging and so on. So product management is a very broad topic. Hmm. And at Carthage, we focus on physical goods. But often you'll hear about product management for software goods. Mm. And everything that we teach actually applies to hardware, software, services as well. The process of ideation and design thinking and product design, and then how do you go to market? How do you communicate it? We cover it all.
That's all applicable.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Lisa Franklin, who is Assistant Professor of Management and Marketing at Carthage, and she has a very direct hand in a relatively new graduate program at Carthage, the master's degree in product management. And we're going to be talking in a couple of minutes about what the program sort of looks like and the kind of things that one gets to experience. I wonder, Lisa Franklin, if you would mind us turning back the clock for just a second. You were at Johnson Controls for 26 years, eventually Global Director of Product Management. And it sounds like, if I understand correctly, you were in that sector of the company that was dealing mostly with automotive batteries.
Correct.
So I just wonder if you could kind of give us at least a general sense of the kind of things that you would have done at Johnson Controls, and also, because just to apply it then more generally, I mean, in terms of what product managers do and how much of what you do is about taking something that's already there versus helping to bring about something that hasn't been there at all.
Right. Well, first of all, let me just say, and I tell my students this all the time, there are no boring products. You know, because when I tell people, I was the battery lady, they're like, oh, well, that's fun. Actually, batteries are very exciting and very complex.
Right, very interesting.
So, and interesting, too. So some of the products that I was involved with during my tenure at Johnson Controls, we did a lot of interesting things with batteries. I'd work with retailers and I'm not going to name a bunch of names here, but if they sold automotive batteries, we worked with them.
Mm.
And things like helping them plan their assortment, making sure that when you came in with your vehicle and someone came in with their vehicle, we were able to service both of you and have the appropriate battery for your needs. So there's assortment planning. There was how can we maybe take one battery that is smaller but has the power requirements to fit various vehicles and have two sets of terminals and spacers that made it stand taller and fit in that vehicle as well, or how do we make it easier to install or take out new handle designs that are integrated into the cover and those kinds of things. Power requirements changed over the time I was there, so technology changed, and we designed different batteries to fit and power the needs of the modern vehicle. We put electronics in some of our batteries to conserve power so that if you left your lights on, you were able to come back and click a button and you're back in business, so you're not left stranded. Mm. I mean, a lot of things like that. I could talk about batteries all day long, but that's not what this is. But essentially, even a product like that you think is fairly straightforward, there's a lot of opportunity for innovation.
That's why it's fun to talk about this, because that's exactly the kind of thing that's completely lost on most of us, that a car battery is a car battery. At a glance, seems like the same thing that it was 50 years ago. And, of course, that isn't. It improves over the years with various innovations and breakthroughs and so on. And I guess part of what your responsibilities are as a product manager is helping to decide which choices, which innovations make the most sense. And I suppose part of the question is also what's going to be cost effective. What are the innovations that are going to cost too much money to be practical? Now, does that need to bring in expertise from other aspects of the company, or does a product manager even have that kind of responsibility of determining something like that?
Well, you do have that responsibility. So, yes, we're always working cross-functionally with everyone in the company, but there's SKU rationalization, which products should we keep, which shouldn't we keep, when do we retire these parts, those kinds of things. So you're looking at the full portfolio of all of the products that you offer and determining when they come in, when they start and when they end. That's why I say it's both analytical and creative, because we also get into the brand, creating brands. We get into the intellectual property. How do we maintain and really kind of stack our intellectual property so that we get the greatest protection and benefit for the company? For instance, there can be something that you do as an innovation because of process that could also, it does have benefits to the product, and therefore you can get a patent, you can have trade secrets, you then can copyright and trademark and, you know, kind of stack the intellectual property and have a full strategy that protects the company's investment and your brand and your place in the industry. So it is very complex.
Wow. And that's, and all of that to some extent falls under the auspices of a product manager and what this thing called product management.
Yes, yes.
I also think now, maybe even now specifically in the field we're talking about right now, that you think about the way in which the landscape has changed in terms of vehicles and how they are powered, and that, for instance, now we see many more electrically powered vehicles than was once the case. And so a company like Johnson Controls at some point has to make the decision, and maybe that decision gets repeatedly made about, is this an area in which we're going to go, or does it make more sense to leave that to other companies to create what's necessary for an electric car, for instance?
Right. And in fact, I should say Johnson Controls did sell the division that I worked in right after I left. I decided to retire from the company. So it's known now as Clarius. It's a standalone company of automotive batteries.
Okay,
the largest in the world.
Wow, okay.
Yes.
Cool.
So just to be clear.
No, that's good. That's good to know. So so people shouldn't go Googling for Johnson Controls and batteries. But I mean, so that kind of question about should we venture off into this direction, electric vehicles, for instance, a question like that also falls under the purview of a product manager?
Well, yes. It's not, I wouldn't say they have sole responsibility. I mean, obviously those large strategic decisions are made collaboratively and at high levels of the company. But certainly the product management team is part of that decision-making process.
Right. It really does sound like fascinating stuff. And again, it's the sort of thing that, you know, most of us never really see in terms of how the sausage is made. We just enjoy the sausage. But that's what the product manager gets to be involved in. And of course, as you've already said, in many different environments, sometimes when we're talking about hard goods versus soft goods and even services, all of those can be, in a sense, crafted and shaped and guided by this thing called product management. So describe to our listeners the need that this graduate program at Carthage seeks to address.
So it is, product management is a growing field, and people come to it from many different disciplines. So one of the things that I've done after leaving my role at Johnson Controls is in consulting. I worked with many different mid-sized businesses and worked with a group of product managers from different companies, comparing our processes and things like that. And a lot of mid-sized companies don't necessarily have a formalized product management program already. So the activities that we've been talking about may reside in engineering, or it might be a piece of marketing, or, you know, all where they're not necessarily brought together in one department or one group. So by educating people on what product management is as a whole and teaching these skills of, it's really the idea generation, the product marketing, the communication, the project management of learning how to actually bring it from idea to reality, and working with people of all departments and coming in on time and on budget and all of that. Those are all the independent skills that we teach in this course. So companies that that want to grow and innovate, it's a great opportunity for them to kind of raise the skill set of their workers, their current workers, and also people that are early or changing careers, give them an opportunity to learn about how to broaden their skills.
Hmm. Explain to our listeners sort of the timeline when somebody pursues this. You were telling me that there's kind of something that happens at the outset, which involves kind of certification, and then it goes from there into even greater depth. Just map out it, what occurs when you pursue this particular degree.
Okay, so we've designed it so the first semester, so from late August to December, is the certification program in product management. So it's a professional certification that people could elect just to participate in that. And in there, we have courses that are absolutely 100% product management courses. So we have introduction to product management. We have a little engineering. You know, you don't have to be a full-on engineer to do it, but you need to understand engineering decisions. You need to understand material selection and how those decisions are made, and we are part of that in working with a design team. We learn project management, how to take an idea and develop it and eventually launch from ideation to launch, and product marketing, how to communicate the idea. So those are kind of the segments that are in that, and that's all contained in that first semester. A person at the end of the students at the end of the semester get a certification. Then if they elect to continue into a full master's degree, it's a master's of science degree, they have this is where the overlap with the master's in business design and innovation come in, and we join that larger group. And there are courses in leadership and sustainability and these bigger, broader themes. I also teach in that program as well in strategic marketing analysis. And we continue, and there are a couple additional courses that only the product management people take, their advanced product management and a product management experience. But basically, it becomes part of the broader umbrella at Carthage with the Masters of Science program. Hmm. So it's accelerated. At the end of a calendar or a school academic calendar, the students earn a full Master's of Science degree.
So in a single year.
In a single year.
Yeah. So, yes, one can certainly expect then that that's going to be an accelerated experience. But how exciting, and particularly when it is part of something that is so important and a real emerging field and growing field. I'm just curious. It seems like much of what we've talked about in terms of what occurs in a company is something that probably has been happening to some extent for a long time, but probably happening in a really different way. And it's almost...
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center offers no-cost, unbiased Medicare workshops for those new to Medicare or who want to learn more. For more information, contact 262-605-6652.
It's Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. At 844, here's what's happening in news. Talks between senior delegations from Ukraine and the United States on how to end Russia's war with Ukraine have started today in Saudi Arabia, hours after Russian air defenses shot down 337 Ukrainian drones over Russia. Europe and Asian benchmarks opened mixed this morning after a massive sell-off on Wall Street yesterday, At one point, the S&P 500 was down 3.6%. It closed just below 3%, while the Dow dropped 2% and the NASDAQ dropped 4%. And Governor Tony Evers has proposed a capital budget of more than $4 billion here in the state of Wisconsin. This is WPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from Bank of America. From local shops to global enterprises, Bank of America is committed to helping businesses of all sizes make every move matter. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness. From Indeed, committed to giving job listings increased visibility with relevant candidates through its sponsored jobs feature. Learn more at indeed.com/NPR. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm E. Martinez. What do Mudeng, the pygmy hippo, Haley Welch, a.k.a. the Hawk to a Girl, and First Lady Melania Trump all have in common? Well, they inspired highly valuable, highly volatile types of cryptocurrency over the past year, meme coins. So how should we think about this current moment in the crypto markets? Here's Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi from our Planet Money podcast.
It's generally accepted that the first meme coin was launched back in 2013 by an Australian tech worker named Jackson Palmer. We talked to him in 2018 about how he came up with the idea for Dogecoin.
I had one browser tab open with this article about Doge, and right next to it I had CoinMarketCap, so my tab names kind of almost spelt it out for me.
Doge, you may remember, was a popular meme featuring a quizzical Shiba Inu paired with grammatically challenged captions like, "Such wow."
And I just thought, Dogecoin, that's hilarious.
Doge was supposed to be a joke about how absurdly speculative crypto was becoming. But instead of rethinking their investments, the good people of the crypto world leaned in. The value of Dogecoin took off, and a bunch of other meme coins followed. For a while, the number of new coins was limited because creating a new one required some technical expertise. But recently, that has changed because of a platform called Pump.Fun. Launched in early 2024 by a group of London-based entrepreneurs, Pump.Fun is a way to allow basically anyone to create their own crypto. We reached out to them, but they didn't get back to us. Over the past year, more than 5 million new meme coins have been listed on the platform, by everyone from literal children to C-list celebrities to presidents. As Bloomberg investigative reporter Zeke Fox explains, not all of these meme coin launches are successful.
Something like 99% of coins are dead on arrival.
Which means they basically have zero buyers.
Right. Like, I bet you a lot of them never sell a single token.
He says some fortunes are made on meme coins, but he's also seen countless pump-and-dump schemes and enormous losses for investors, not unlike a casino. It's essentially a new form of gambling where the coin's creators are at a huge advantage.
By the time that you or I hear about any coin, you know, the insiders have probably accumulated a big supply at a low price, and they're just waiting for losers like us to hear about it and buy some so that they can sell theirs and get real money.
Zeke says some traders have made millions of dollars off of meme coins, which has helped fuel the frenzy over new ones. But Dune Analytics found that just 3% of traders have ever made more than $1,000. And keep in mind, meme coin trading is a zero-sum game. Every dollar someone makes on a meme coin mathematically has to come at the expense of someone else buying it. Which means that this tiny minority of winners, that 3% of traders, they're making their fortunes off the vast majority of meme coin investors.
Now, I think that most of the people who buy this, like, they're not being fooled by the coins. They just think that, hey, I am not the last person who's going to buy this coin. Someone else will come along later and buy this coin for more.
Has anyone made a greater fool coin?
I guarantee that they have.
And when we checked the Pump.Fun registry, there turned out to be no less than 12 competing greater fool meme coins, half of them with the ticker sign FOOL. Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi, NPR News.
Planet Money and the Indicator podcast have been doing a mini-series on meme coins. You can catch up in any podcast app.
Support for Planet Money comes from Charles Schwab, offering investors choices like full-service wealth management, advice, investing, and trading on thinkorswim. Learn more at schwab.com.
This is NPR News.
And this is Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8:49. Thanks so much for being here. A couple more stories to get to this hour here on the program, including what is happening in Washington, D.C. right now. You might remember that a Black Lives Matter mural was painted on the ground, on the street in Washington, D.C. just a couple of years ago. But now it's being removed. We'll hear why coming up, plus news at 9 o'clock on WPR.
You have the power to make a difference right where you are. Giving your time and your skills to support an issue or community group you care about is a real way to help and a great way to make connections with others. Find something you're passionate about and lend a hand. Learn more at volunteerwisconsin.org. WPR supports volunteering in our communities.
It's Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. In sports, the Milwaukee Bucks will take on the Indiana Pacers on the road tonight at 6:30. The Wisconsin Badgers men's basketball team waiting to find out who they will play in the Big Ten tournament. They'll play the winner of Northwestern versus Minnesota. Marquette's men's team knows who they will play in the Big East tournament. That'll be Xavier, and that game takes place on Thursday. The women's team is for both Marquette and Wisconsin now out of the Big East and Big Ten tournaments, respectively. In weather, colder today than yesterday, but that's not saying much because yesterday was pretty warm across the state. Highs in the 30s and 40s today. Overnight, not too bad. Low temperatures down into the 20s. Tomorrow, it's going to warm back up a bit with highs in the 40s and 50s, but the temperatures will continue rising across the state throughout the rest of the week. This is WPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Staffing changes at the Pentagon include at least two moves that affect what troops can or cannot do in combat. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth fired some of the Pentagon's Judge Advocates General, or JAGs. They're the lawyers who keep the military in check and operating within the laws of armed conflict. Hegseth is also cutting positions and offices at the Pentagon that are focused on reducing harm to civilians during combat operations. Retired Army General Joseph Votel has a different view of those jobs.
I've seen the heartbreaking impact of where things have gone wrong. If you cause so many civilian casualties and you cause so much civilian harm here, it can actually undermine the mission that the military has been sent in to do.
Votel served as head of the U.S. Central Command during President Trump's first term. Leila Fadel spoke with him about why two Pentagon groups were created, the Civilian Harm Mitigation and Response Office and the Civilian Protection Center.
These particular offices were initiated during the first Trump administration, particularly during our campaign against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, where we were confronting on a day-to-day basis ISIS fighters who were intermingled and frequently used the civilian population as shields as we were going through this. So it was a significant challenge that we were having operationally.
I worked in Iraq for a long time, and I saw the damage done to the war of hearts and minds when a civilian was killed. I mean, what is the importance when it comes to combat operations to make sure you're protecting civilian life when a war is going on?
Well, I think the most important aspect is that these efforts, I think, can help us actually add precision to our military lethality. The new administration has talked a lot about this, and I certainly agree with that. You know, you don't necessarily have to kill civilians to cause harm against civilians. Removing important infrastructure and other aspects like that certainly can have an impact.
But on the basic level, doesn't it matter that the U.S. military is seen as a military that protects civilian life, even when you're fighting an enemy?
Certainly it does. I mean, you know, the law of armed conflict is a foundational underpinning to, you know, the training of our officer and non-commissioned officer leaders. And we recognize we have a responsibility to protect innocents and to conduct our operations in accordance with the international norms, standards, and laws. And I think that this effort that is focused on civilian harm mitigation, I think it helps enhance that. I don't think this is designed to be more constricting on commanders. I think it's really designed to be more informative in helping us be a better educated and smarter force.
When you heard these positions at offices were being cut, what was your first reaction?
Obviously, this is an area that I've paid some attention to, largely because of my own experience. So,
yeah, I mean, you were among the first troops into Afghanistan in 2001, and you've commanded troops there and in Iraq.
Right. So I've dealt with this problem quite often as a CENTCOM commander. This was a daily challenge for us in places like Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan. So it isn't something that you take lightly. So again, these are difficult decisions that the department is making about where they put their resources. I don't want to minimize that. But in my view, I think the benefit to be gained by supporting these positions, I think it outweighs the movement of resources to other places.
If you could just say a little bit more about why it's a net benefit. I mean, when you think about resources and allocating resources to this, how important is it to the stated mission?
Yeah, I think there's three big areas where this can really help. One is in this human shielding aspect that we've talked about. Related to that is understanding the information environment around that and how you can reduce the disinformation and the misuse of information. The new administration, I think, correctly has embraced things like artificial intelligence and reaching out to advanced technologies. These are capabilities that can actually help in this particular area. I think we've seen some examples of that with the Israelis trying to use artificial intelligence to try to be more precise in the things that they are doing.
But it's a very flawed, I mean, there's been a lot of criticism, too, that there's a targeting system that ends up possibly getting people caught in the mix that aren't actually Hamas.
And that's always a possibility in these operations. And I'm the first to tell you, as somebody who did this, is that we did make mistakes. It's not clean. It's going to be difficult. But it shouldn't diminish our desire to try to mitigate that as much as we possibly can.
Retired U.S. Army General Joseph Vattel, he served as head of U.S. Central Command. Thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Okay, thank you.
The removal of Washington, D.C.'s Black Lives Matter street mural is underway. The city created the mural in front of Lafayette Square in 2020 amid a nationwide wave of protests after police murdered George Floyd. Here's Sarah Y. Kim from member station WAMU.
On Monday morning, a few residents and visitors stopped to say goodbye to Black Lives Matter Plaza, a two-block mural composed of large yellow letters. They watched construction workers remove bollards from the street. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser named the plaza and commissioned the mural shortly after federal officers tear gassed people in Lafayette Square, peacefully protesting police brutality. It was seen as an act of defiance against President Donald Trump, but now the mayor is overseeing its destruction. D.C. native Karen George says she's upset, but there isn't much Bowser can do. The city has to remove the mural or risk losing federal funds.
It's a rock and a hard place for her. We're not a state, we're a district.
Her sister, Adrienne Lind, says she thought the mural would be permanent, a symbol of her city and a tourist attraction like the Washington Monument. She says it's painful to see it go, but that it won't be forgotten.
There's no such thing as erasure. If that's the attempt, it's just not possible to do, because it's not just that we saw it, the whole world saw it.
Lind and George say they'd like to see it preserved in a museum or recreated elsewhere in the city. Dr. Reed Tuckson, former health commissioner for the city, says this is an all too familiar situation where outsiders exert power over the people of D.C.
Once again, we see the Congress treating this city as if we were not adults who could govern their own affairs.
Under a bill introduced last week in Congress, the street is expected to be redesignated as Liberty Plaza. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Y. Kim in Washington.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Alex Crow, and that'll do it for Morning Edition on this Tuesday, the 11th of March, on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us this morning, and thanks to John Davis for helping bring us the news, which is on the way.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Kenosha Master Gardener Association and Kenosha County Extension are hosting a gardening conference March 15th from 8:30 a.m. to 3:15 at the Kenosha County Center in Bristol. For more info, call 262.
For listening.
This is WGTD HD 91.1 Kenosha Racine 101.